Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica. And
this is episode 79 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good evening.
Good evening.
For kicks, this time I have a cold instead of Erin, so I might occasionally cough.
I have not actually been coughing my lungs out for once.
Well, I'm carrying that load for you this week, so.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
That's nice. I do that a lot, I notice. And the last time I go,
Sorry. Nothing like recording yourself talking to learn all of your weird
That's
verbal
how I
tics.
Realize how much I sound like a Californian.
Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway.
Toads.
Last time we had talked about how we were going to do a giveaway for 2 skeins of Tosh Marina Light for, yes. Since we have over 1,000 members in our group. I know we have a lot more listeners, but in our group we now have over 1,000 members. So I did a random number generator drawing and came up with 2 names, Clever Girl and a Linux Witch. Your name is awesome.
Linux Witch?
Yeah.
I know her. It's Adrienne down in Oregon. I've met her at a couple of different events, I think.
So is she the one that got in touch with you?
Yes. So I've heard from Adrienne. I haven't heard from Clever Girl, and she's a Seattleite. So hopefully
If you're listening, please get in touch with Jessica with your mailing address.
And I'll send you yummy yarn.
By the last day of the month. Uh-huh. Otherwise, we're going to draw another name.
All right.
I think that's only fair.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I was contacted by Sasa and Hannah of KnitFit. They are putting on their Fiber Festival in Seattle again this year. It's November 2nd and 3rd, and they are offering Double Knit listeners a prize, just like last year. So it will be for a 3-hour class of your choice. I think Sasa said that the class listings are going to be posted in July, and registration opens in August. So we will come up with some kind of question.
Yeah.
Contest thing to post on the board. And if you are planning on being in Seattle that weekend, or you live in Seattle or the area, or if you when you decide you want to visit,
that's right,
then you can enter to win there.
Yeah.
And I'll do that soon. And I saw that they just put the poster up on Facebook, so they should be updating all their information. But I know for sure it's 11 November 2nd and 3rd. And it's going to be at the same place it was last year, at the Ballard Community Center, which is awesome for me. And I am possibly teaching, but I have to think really hard about it because I'm not sure that I am 100% able to fully do this class justice that they want me to teach.
Cool.
Which is reading Japanese pattern books, because I've knit some patterns from Japanese books. I have to think about it. We'll see.
All right.
But yeah, it sounds like they have some interesting classes being offered again this year. This is the second year, so it'll probably be better than last year.
Yeah.
So, what you knitting?
Well, I've been on a tear using hand spun. Like, this whole deep stash thing had me digging into my, like, giant bin O hand spun that I never use. So, I've made a ton of stuff just with little bits. I mean, the last time we talked, I had done a couple hand spun projects. So I did a crocheted hat that's called the bulky, I think it's called the bulky red skull cap with big button. And
that's a long name.
I know. I'm sorry. I won't be able to give you the all the authors. Oh, sorry. With the red bulky skull cap with big black button by Pinar Vardar. It's a crocheted hat. Just like a little cloche style hat that's supposed to have a big button. Mine does not have a big button yet. And then with more hand spun, I did a pair of booties that the crocheted hat was a free pattern. The booties are a free pattern too. And these are called Mariam's Booties by Zuzana K. That are just like a cute little...
It's like a couple kind of interesting names in a row.
It is.
It and sounds like you're just making people's names.
I am. The Hoochie Goochie Booties by Bloopity Floo.
It
it's like
that
the
way.
Eddie Izzard, you know, of Ingeborg Humperdinck, you know. Bibbly Scummity-Dub. No, wait. Jerry Dorsey, go back. And then I made a pair of mitts out of a mill end of Koigu Kirsty that I just made up the pattern. I love that yarn. Yeah. It's so round and crispy. It's round. I love it. That was really nice.
It was really nice.
Not a lot of shops carry. I think it's pretty spendy, though, because I think you get, like, maybe, like, 110 yards for, like, $15, $16, which would explain why maybe it's not the most popular.
Yeah.
But it is a nice yarn to knit with if you get a chance.
Yeah, I knit Audrey a toddler hat out of that, out of one skein. It was from one of the one skein books, I think. Uh-huh. And Amanda gave me the yarn, so it was free to me.
I have some that Amanda gave me. That was a hideous mustard color that I've over-dyed into, like, my signature acid green, but I still haven't knit anything with it. Yeah. I should really
that. It was pink with, like, the Koigu flex that they put on stuff, so.
Yeah. Then the other one I did, I was another made-up pattern. It was some bulky hand-spun. And all these hand-spun, like, all these badges, they're all the same shade of blue-green. It's pretty pathetic. They all look...
What's your hand-spun?
I know. It was pretty sad, though. I was like, God, more blue yarn? What the hell? I just did, like, kind of a double moss stitch fakey thing, and I did, like, a squared off top hat, so I just, like, knit up and then three needle bind off on the inside.
I like those.
I finally finished my little green tube. I still have to put a button on it. The steeks on it are a mess.
Oh, the baby vest?
Yeah, the little baby vest I made. I was just late. It was lazy. It was like, it was dark. It was late. I had my little reading glasses on. And I tried to crochet steek using the same yarn.
That's a bad idea.
Terrible idea. So it was a messy steek, but I just like cut it anyway. So there's a lot more fluff on the inside of the steeks than you would normally have with a crocheted steek. So I had to spend some time at knitting, like stitching it all down with thread. But they're like bulky and gross. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did not do my best job knitting that. It was like my, I'm just going to knit, I don't care project. And it shows a bit. So sorry, baby, who will someday receive that. I finished the plain hat I was doing in the squish superwash, which is like a fingering weight, kind of like Kona superwash. Just a really plain knit hat. And then I did another hat. This one is in another hand spun. It was the first roving I ever dyed using cake dyes maybe like 8 years ago and then spun. And it's kind of nice. I mean, it's really soft and the colors actually came out kind of cute. They're like kind of soft, pinky, purpley, mauve-y shades with like a little bit of green in there. It actually looks kind of cute. And my inspiration was a pattern called the Bob Cap, which is just like a pretty, by Mary Keenan. There's a normal name for you. Totally run-of-the-mill name. Yay, Mary. It's just like a really plain stocking cap, except it has three ridges where you, over seven stitches, reach down like three rows and knit them together to make little gathers. Although my yarn is a little busy, so you barely even see that in my hat, but it was, you know, a simple little hat. Then I did a bulky hat and crazy hand spun. I had samples from a couple of different classes, two that were like color classes, so they're like really intense, crazy colored bulky hand spun. And one was an art yarn class, so it's a bright aqua coil yarn where little sections have these like big, thick coily bits to them, so the hat is like nutty. It has like it's wackadoo. It's got like every color in the rainbow plus these big coily lumps that stick out from it, but it's actually kind of cute. It's like you could totally see how someone would be selling it on Etsy for way more money than you could imagine. But I haven't touched Happypotamus. A retro prep, I cut the steek at knitting last week. And then I found one stitch that wasn't properly secured, so I didn't want to finish picking up the edging until I threw it on the sewing. I mean, I'm not worried about it, but I just do need to put a little machine stitching on there to secure it. But that requires effort. Like, I have to actually, like, get all the stuff off my sewing machine. And not figuratively, I have to literally dust off my sewing machine because it is under a layer of silt. So that is like way more effort than I can be bothered with. So that's still in my knitting bag from last week. I started a Sunnyside baby cardigan with some other hand spun. It's some pink and brown merino. The Sunnyside cardigan is by Tanis Lovely, who's I think it was Tanis Fiber Arts. Mm-hmm. It's a free pattern on Ravelry. There are two little top-down baby sweaters. One has cable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, along the front and the raglan, and one has lace. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing the cable-y one. But I barely started it. But it's this pink-brown merino that I used when Meg in our knitting group had her daughter Ruby a couple years ago and knit her, a Miley sweater out of it.
Oh, right.
But I still have probably, like, half of it left. So I thought it would be enough to do this other sweater with.
Cool. Because that's fingering weight.
It's a fingering weight. But I started it, and then I got to the part where I had to, like, establish the pattern. And, again, that involved this thing called thinking that I'm really not doing a lot of lately. And I was just like, ugh, effort, pass. You'd think it was the end of my school year, the way I've been acting lately. But it's not. Just the kids. And then I started Oak Trail from Botanical Knits, which we had talked about, which is the beautiful cloche with the oak leaf on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing it in Tosh Vintage and Tern, which is
gorgeous
gray.
Yeah.
And then I was talking with Andy at Knitting, and one of my camp friends said, "Oh, what are you doing for your camp project?" And I was like, "Oh, man. I haven't even thought about it." And then I realized, like, camp is really soon.
Yeah, that's the Elizabeth Zimmerman
camp. My knitting camp in Wisconsin. New to the podcast.
Jessica goes every year with Meg Swanson.
Yes, with Meg.
And
Amy Dachin.
Hi, Amy. It's more fun now that I've met her.
Yeah. But, so I had a sudden brainstorm, like, yesterday or the day before that... I've always wanted to knit a second seamless hybrid. The shirt yoke one.
Yeah.
So the one I knit was for the Ravelympics, which was like the summer Ravelympics in 2008. I looked it up. And so
I was at a 220 Heather.
Yeah. Mine's out of blue. Sateen. Color 2434.
There you go.
But when that Ravelympics was going on, I was going on vacation, so I only had like 12 days to knit a sweater. Mm-hmm. So I knit this just dead simple variation on the seamless hybrid where I had 11.5-inch sleeves that have no shaping, that are big, wide sleeves, so it kind of looks like a bell. And then just a short body. I think the body on the sweater, I just measured it. Now I've already forgotten. I think it was 14. It's shorter than that. It's only like 12 to 12.5 inches, mm-hmm. something like that. It's pretty short.
It's kind of swingy, though.
Boxy, but it's straight up and down. There's no shaping.
But it looks swingy.
Well,
when you have it on.
I mean, in the same way that a straight sleeve looks a little belled on me because my arm tapers, I am pretty hourglassy, so straight up and down things look a little more, you know, like look like they have more shape at the bottom because I go in a little bit there.
Yeah.
And I kept meaning to knit another one because it just has a garter stitch edge. It's no fastening, no closures, anything. Just dead simple. And I get so many compliments on it. People are always asking me at work about it. And I've always wanted to knit another one because it's just a really great, like, I just wear it all the time. I love it. And then I was looking on Ravelry at my stuff. And saw that I had this Owl Balance that I bought at my stash sale several years ago. And I kept changing my mind what project I wanted to do. That, like, I wanted to do Acer, but I didn't have enough. And I wanted to do this. And so then I realized, I've got enough to do that. And then that would be kind of a little more, like, multi-seasonal since Owl is wool and or merino and cotton. But also that... My sweater has kind of a Chanel jackety vibe to it in terms of the shape of it. So I thought the tweediness would also kind of speak to that Chanel jackety thing.
But what, is that the reddish color?
It's this purpley, actually. Purpley. It's kind of...
looks kind of red in this light.
It's purple. It's a grayish purple.
Yeah.
But my challenge now is that I have to get it done and get the steek prepared before I leave because since there's cotton in it, I need to machine sew the steek.
Yeah.
I can't rely on crochet to hold it together. So I just was casting on before I came over here, and then ended up getting held up discussing various genocides with my older son as he was writing a final paper for school. But I think that's everything I'm doing right now.
Cool.
I think. Yeah.
My list is short.
Okay.
For real. So I think fire was done last time. Yeah. Fire was done last time. It was blocking. And I've actually worn it.
All right. Cross that off.
So I knit the Love Bug booties by Carrie Bostick Hoge. They're just little baby booties. They were super fun to knit. When yet another nurse at work was having a baby. It's her second, so she was like, I don't need anything, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whatever, you're getting something and you'll like it. So I knit the little Love Bug booties, and they're a sport weight yarn, and they're basically seamless. So you cast on at the cuff, you knit down, you throw in some stripes, you do some shaping, and then you do garter stitch, and you can either Kitchener the bottoms, or you can three needle. I just turned it inside out and three needle bound off, because babies don't walk on their feet.
Yes.
So there's no reason, I mean, unless you're super picky about it.
Yeah.
I don't like Kitchener and garter stitch anyways.
No, so. It's hard to make it look good.
Yeah. So I just, and I did those in like an evening, and then I decided, since those were so fast, that I would just do a hat with the same yarn. I used baby cash merino out of my stash. And it's blue and green.
Cool. They're cute. Really cute. There are pictures on Aaron's blog. They're adorable.
And I just threw the hat pattern up on my blog. It's like baby size. I didn't like size it or anything, but it's just like your basic baby hat and stripes.
Yeah.
So if you need to knit a baby hat.
There you go.
And have baby cash merino.
It's a good one for knitting for babies.
Yeah. And she really liked it. She's like, my God, everybody was like, ooh! You know, like the baby shower where everyone goes, ooh!
Oh, so cute.
Yeah. So everyone did that at her baby shower, so. I am right now working on the second Gentleman's Half Hose and Ringwood pattern. So I had talked last time about how I had, like, knit half the first sock and realized that it was too big. And so I finally finished the first one. What also happened was that we went to the beach because it was really nice out.
Uh-huh.
And I took them to work on and then thought I lost them, but they were just buried under other yarn. Like the project bag was buried under other yarn. next to where I knit, which is like buried in yarn right now. but then I found them and I finished the first one, and I'm more than halfway through the leg on the second one now.
That's good.
And I've only been working on this. It's like my purse knitting, so I haven't been working on it very often, often because I'm working on sample knitting, which I can't talk about, but that'll be done by the end of the month. I'm hoping, my sister-in-law is graduating from her master's program, the first part of her master's program, over the weekend, so we're staying the night on Bainbridge because it's at Islandwood.
Oh, right, right.
That'll
be fun.
So I'm just taking my sample knitting to hopefully knock it out.
Yeah.
And I know that Elizabeth wants it too, so that she can put the final touches on it. Yeah. So, but it's awesome.
Cool.
I can't wait to share it with you.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, which I also had a problem with, was my Aislinn. And I was listening to Stash and Burn. And apparently, it's like Ashlyn or some crazy thing that, like, it's some like other pronunciation.
Oh.
It's Gaelic or something.
Oh.
It's like Aislinn or Aislinn. I'm just going to say Aislinn because that's really easy for me.
Yeah, also, like, can I make a public plea to designers? Like, I know there is a, you know, there's a glut of patterns. There's millions of patterns out there, and you don't want to have the 8 millionth hat called, you know, bulky hat or mountaintop or whatever it is, and it seems like people's solution to that is to go for the
crazy spelling,
foreign language or weird spelling, and it's like, that does not make life easy.
This could be Aislinn. Maybe she wants it to be Aislinn, didn't realize it was another word. But the other thing is, I assume that if it's another language, that people would put what it means and how to say it on their pattern.
Like when we got the Fructigard pattern from Fiber Company, it took me like 4 months of having that pattern in the shop, finally learning how to spell it so I could search for it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like,
I was just search for Fruk.
Yeah. Retrogar. Yeah, and so it's my plea to designers is, yeah, if you're going to delve into a foreign language, at least let us know how to say it, how to pronounce it. What also, it I can't even tell you how many people come into the yarn shop talking about the clapotee pattern, which in the pattern does tell you how to pronounce Clapotis. It and what Clapotis. It means and call it like clapotis or clapotis or
Schlemiel.
Clapotis or... Yeah.
Sorry.
Your 70s is showing.
I was born in 1980. My sister and I used to watch that on rerun. So
yeah, my older son said something about jumping the shark, and like he knows jump the shark in its colloquial sense, but he mm-hmm. didn't actually know what it came from, and he thought it was a joke. Like, he thought the idea that a character on a TV show actually like ski jumped over a shark was like a joke, and I'm like,
no,
it was the Fonz.
Yep,
had made him watch that. Sorry. Okay, total tangent.
TV weirdness.
Random tangent. But anyway,
so my plea
to designers.
Yeah.
Something pronounceable, something spellable.
Yeah. So I knit that. I knit the back. I was working on the back last time. So I finished the back, finished the first front, and then knit most of the second front and decided to lay the left front and the right front next to each other and realized there was a problem. The problem being that on the first front, the lace panel was wider and the stockinette panel was way narrower. And so I looked at the pattern and I found errata in the setup row. Mm. So anyone who else is knitting that and the errata affected them, I apologize. I ripped out the whole first front of my sweater so I could re-knit it correctly. Because I just assumed that the setup row is going to be correct because it's super important.
Yeah.
When you're establishing your lace patterns. And the only reason that I realized it was because I laid them out next to each other.
I was going
to
say, you're so lucky you did that, because if it had been me, I would have knit the entire sweater, photographed it for my blog, then looked at the photograph on the computer and go, what?
A little odd.
So lucky that you found it now.
Yeah, and I emailed her and I said, hey, I think I found errata. And then like 2 hours later, there was an update.
Yeah.
If you got that update, it was because of me. So, I just finished re-knitting the first front day before yesterday on Sunday. And I was going to knit, because the sleeves are knit separately, everything is seamed together. So I was going to do that, and then I decided that I didn't really know how long I wanted the sleeves to be. So I'm going to sew the front and the back together. I'm going to block them, sew them together, and then do that top-down set-in sleeve method, like Audrey Nunstaz, where you pick up around the whole armhole edge, and then you do short rows at the top. And
the pattern is written to have you just do them flat and sew them in? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know how long I want them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that works.
I still have a whole other skein of yarn.
Oh, okay.
I've only used most of the first two, and I had three. So, other than that, false start, or start and then restart, that's moving along. But I've been working on it because I've been working on my sample knitting.
Yeah.
So, and I've been doing lots of homework.
Yes.
Because I realized that October's not that far away.
Ugh. I was, like, in a dream world, like, the same once I got prompted by the friend about, like, hey, what are you knitting for camp? I had a moment this weekend where I realized I haven't bought plane tickets for camp.
Uh-oh.
Ah! So I went online and bought my tickets to Wisconsin. But I just, like, someone said to me this yesterday, like, so when's the last day of school? And I went, and Kathy said Friday. I was like, this Friday? She's like, yeah. Like, oh God, I'm mother of the year. Okay. And I was like, ah, crap. I can't believe the kids are out of school already on Friday. That's crazy.
Yeah. Audrey had her last day of school last week.
Oh,
they,
wow.
They end a week earlier than the public school system. And if you are doing our deep stash knit along, the time section, whatever you want to call it, ends at the end of June. So by the time this is posted, you'll have a couple more weeks to post your projects. All the information is on the Double Knit board on Ravelry for that. People are still posting lots of stuff. I know. So. I
was going through some of it this weekend, and I'm so impressed with all of you. And
yeah. Love you didn't
all
go.
Yeah, I love all of it. And it's really inspiring. I mean, I've been doing a lot of using up little odds and ends. Yeah. Oh, the other thing, I'm still using my little Zoom loom. So, last night, that's something else that's really good for when it's like, I'm too brain dead. Like, I have to do math now. I just pick up the Zoom loom. And I've just been using little odds and ends of hand-spun yarn, and it's very satisfying to use all that up.
So you have, like, a finished thing.
Yeah. And, it's that little, like, it takes about maybe 10 minutes to weave one of those little squares. So it's
fun.
Like, bing! Ooh, look, I'm done! So I wove, like, two of them last night while I was finishing an episode of Dexter or something. So
cool.
That's really, that's very satisfying to me. Yeah.
Last time we talked about color work, so I thought we'd kind of wrap that up. You can talk about steeks.
Oh, okay. Well, steeks
and how to add in, if something's not written to be steeked, but you want to knit it in the round and it's color work, how you add in the stitches and where you do that.
Okay. Well, steeks are, I mean, there's a whole world of steeks and personal preferences and
references. Uni Jane has a whole tutorial on her blog.
On her blog, she goes through several methods of steeks. How many stitches you want for the steek kind of varies on personal preference. It also depends on the gauge. But general rule of thumb, I think of it as having about an inch worth of knitting for your steek. So if I'm knitting in Cascade 220, I usually have a 5-stitch steek. If people are knitting with, like, Shetland, they might have a 7 or a 9-stitch steek. Joyce Williams used to like to have really wide steeks. She used to like have, like, 11. Generally, I like an odd number.
That's what I was going to say. I always try to use an odd number.
Because if you're going to machine stitch to stabilize your steek, you can stitch on either side of that stitch and then cut that stitch in half. Mm-hmm. If you're going to crochet to stabilize your steek, what you do is you crochet one side of that center stitch to one side of its adjacent stitch on one side, and then the other side of it to its adjacent stitch on the other side, and you crochet those together just using a slip stitch crochet, and then when you cut just those running strands between the two halves of the stitch. Yeah. Of course, I'm showing this all with my...
Yeah, like
I'm pantomiming this whole thing. I'm sure it's like coming vividly to life for you.
Like make ones and you lift the bar in between the stitches. Yeah. That's where you cut.
So you just cut those little... We're just like pantomiming this whole thing. But you cut just that center of that one stitch, which makes a crocheted steek really tidy because there's no tufts, there's no ends of stuff.
Right.
A machine stitch steek, while easy and very secure, has little tufty ends that stick out.
Yeah.
And again, it depends on your gauge. You know, if it's a really fine gauge, those little tufty ends are kind of short. If you're using a big gauge, those tufty ends can be kind of big.
Also,
you might want to stitch them down.
With that sweater, if it has cotton in it, you want to machine sew it down. If it's superwash, you want to generally sew it
definitely,
down.
Yes, definitely.
Stuff is just gonna...
Anything that's slippery, you want to machine stitch because... Crocheting is great for sticky wool. So,
Shetland,
Icelandic wool, things that are sticky like Velcro, things that are hard to rip out work really well for crocheting. And you also want to crochet very firmly to make that really secure. But when you're doing color work, so I do a lot of steek sweaters that are just like plain knit sweaters, but when you're doing color work, the important thing is that if you're, you know, let's assume your color work is only 2 colors per round. Unless, I mean, if you want to get crazy and go like 3 colors, good on you. But let's just talk about 2 colors. Most fair isle, you know, or fair isle by definition is only 2 colors in a round. So the important thing, though, is to have both of those colors kind of engaged, for lack of a better term, through the steek stitches. So you don't want to, like, knit your pattern, you know, 3 in white, 1 in red, 3 in white, 1 in red, and get to the steek, and then just knit wait until you get to the beginning of the next round. You want the white and the red yarn knit into the steek.
Yeah, kind of like a checkerboard.
Yeah, so you can do, like Meg always says, like you can do stripes or you can do speckles. So, you know, stripes, I like to do stripes because stripes are easy, and I can see them, and I remember that I'm knitting in stripes when I get to that. So, you know, I might knit 1 white, 1 red, 1 white, 1 red, 1 white. Or you can do a checkerboard. So you do one white, one red, one white, one red, one white, and then on the next row, red, white, red. Yeah, opposite. Yeah. So, but the point is, though, then when you secure that center stitch, you've got the ends of both of those colors in there. Okay. Also, someone was just asking me this the other day, maybe at knitting, that they had been told that you shouldn't do your color changes in your steek. And that's one of those personal things, I guess. Like, my opinion is put all your garbage in the steek because you're going to just cut it, you know, secure it, cut it all off, and it's going to be hidden. Why would you want to deal with color changes somewhere else?
Yeah.
I know, like, Meg likes to just spit splice her color changes so that, and then you'll see, though, you know, there might be a gradual color shift that will happen across the steek.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that way you don't have any little things hanging out. But I will leave all, I mean, but I'm also, that's my personality. Like, I'll leave all sorts of messy crap hanging in the back of my steek and then know that, like, later on I'm going to clean it all up and secure it all. But again, you know, knitting is, you know, whatever is going to make the knitter happiest. My happy place is whatever takes the least effort. That is, like,
good answer.
I mean, it's like, well, it's like that with the happy potamus. When Andy asked me what I'm going to do about weaving in all the ends, it's like, I'm going to tie them in knots and stuff them inside this hippo because no one's ever going to see it. So why should I go to the effort of weaving in those ends?
Yeah.
You know, I know other people, like, what is it? Katie always talks about how her mother said with embroidery, like, the back has to be as beautiful as the front. Like, definitely not my life philosophy. If no one's ever going to see the back, it can be as messy as you want it to be. That's my idea. But, you know, personal preference, though, it's like, is what's going to make you happy. But so that's, like, a really general overview on steeks. There's a lot of good videos. There's, like, a brief video with Raga, Eric's daughter, on YouTube, where she shows how to crochet a steek in Icelandic. And in that, since it's like typical Icelandic sweater, the body is solid,
mm-hmm.
and there's just little color work in the yoke, she, for the center stitch, actually purled it. So then she crocheted the steek from the opposite side of the sweater, mm-hmm. so she could just follow this one little knit stitch up the center of the steek.
I see.
As a good, like, visual guide, especially since Icelandic, you know, since it's all one color and it's hairy and it's, you know, fluffy. And so that's a good little trick that I keep forgetting to incorporate into my own stuff. But Susan Anderson has a little video on her YouTube channel where she shows how she steeked a sweater that she didn't knit intending it to be steeked. She just decided to turn a pullover into a cardigan. So she used machine stitching to secure the steek,
which
on
is
that.
A good option if you knit a pullover and then decide that you don't wear it because it's a pullover,
right?
To be able to
cut it open.
Yep.
So yeah, so there's a lot of possibilities with that.
Don't be scared of them.
Yeah,
you could even do like a little wrister as a steek with color work, and then just cut it open. Throw some little fasteners on it, call it good.
Yeah,
if you just want to try it out,
just to experiment with it. Or like a mug cozy or something, mm-hmm. where you just do a tiny little piece of knitting just to show yourself that it's not terrifying. Because it's one of those things where, once you do it, you realize there's nothing really scary about it, that your knitting does not want to unravel. You know, when you cut open the front of a cardigan, the edges just roll underneath.
They roll under
so tidily and so just neat and well behaved, and just no hint of wanting to unravel. Your knitting wants to unravel, you know, in the reverse of the direction you knit it. So if you knit your sweater from the bottom to the top, it wants to unravel down to the hem. It doesn't want to unravel side to side.
Yeah.
And actually, if you've ever like actually with my retro prep, I decided I didn't like the ribbing was too short and I wanted to put new ribbing on. And so I just went to cut it off, and then I had to, like, unravel mm-hmm. the knitting going in the reverse direction of you. And if you've ever, you know, cut and tried to unravel, oh my gosh, it's a nightmare. It's like, it doesn't want to come apart. It just doesn't want to ravel that direction. It really has, like, you know, it's like trying to open a sack of rice, and you start pulling that little crocheted thread on the wrong side, and it just does, you know, it doesn't want to go, and you're like, you cut it, and it, then
I'm
it
thinking
still
about provisional cast on this. I've totally done that.
Yeah, provisional cast on the same thing. So I think, you know, we worry that our knitting wants to unravel.
It'll be and it, okay.
Yeah, our knitting wants to unravel far less than we imagine it wants to. So go for it. Try it out.
Yeah. The only other thing I was going to mention was that traditional color work is no more than 5 stitches in one color as you're working across a row. So you just want to make sure you trap stitches.
Yeah. And I find a lot of patterns out there now are written 4-stranded color work that aren't really, I mean, you know, they're
like the squirrel mittens I did. It's like a big picture. Yeah. It's not like a pattern. It's not a memorizable pattern across. It's more like a picture knitting that's not intarsia. So you just want to make sure that you trap those, because especially for something you're putting your hands in, you don't want to leave big loops of the color you're carrying across free, because you can just, like, break those.
A really good reference... Well, first, a good reference for all this is Schoolhouse Press's book, written in part by Amy Dachin, Knitting with 2 Colors. It deals with a lot of these issues, and it's really... It's just a book of technical advice on knitting all this color knitting. You know, so it shows... It shows different methods of trapping your yarn depending on how you carry your yarn. You know, if you've got your yarns in one hand or the other, and there's a lot of other information on this subject in that book. So it is a really great reference book if you're thinking about color knitting and you want some more information,
like technique oriented information.
It's a really good book for that. But because trapping, it's like I always remember how to trap one direction, and then it takes me like 10 minutes of like staring at my needles and my yarn to remember how to trap the other yarn quickly. And then once I get it, I'm like, oh, right, yeah, this, okay, I got it. But there's that. One hand trapping comes really easily to me, and the other hand is
me too.
I just always forget how to trap it quickly and easily without making a mess out of my yarn.
The other thing about trapping is that you don't want to trap between the same stitches on every row,
right? Because you'll end up making a new pattern.
Yeah, if you're trapping like every third stitch in a row for multiple rows, you're going to create some funkiness in your fabric that's not attractive.
Yeah, you'll see like a little welt that will run up the fabric.
And sometimes you'll see the color you're carrying behind, like the stitches will pull.
Yeah.
So.
In Armenian knitting, you always trap, you trap every third stitch. And so if you use an odd number of stitches for your pattern, for your piece, and you're going one or you're trapping every third stitch, then you'll it'll always offset. I think that's right. Am I getting that right? Yes, I think so. It'll always be offset. And so you're not going to have those traps stacking up on top of each other round after round. Because, yeah, that will pull unattractively. I think though, whenever possible, I like to avoid trapping because and it depends on your gauge, but it's always kind of visible, like especially if your motif is in a light color and you've got to trap a darker background color, it's always kind of visible unless you just make it so ridiculously loose that you've like destroyed the gauge of the stitches on either side. So I try to avoid it when I can, but...
I mean, and the one thing about the squirrel mittens was that they were lined, so I didn't really actually have to worry about it. But if it was super long, I did, just because I was worried about my tension being wonky from having, like, 20 to 30 stitches where you had a super long float. Right. Like, the fabric didn't look right.
I struggled with that a lot when I did Elwood and Ringo mittens, and also when I did the Snowbird mittens that were in vogue many
the
winters
Let It
ago,
Snow ones.
The Let It Snow ones, because that had really long. I mean, it really was an A-stranded knit pattern. I mean, it was a picture in knitting, which by all rights should really be like intarsia, but because it was a mitten, it was done as a stranded pattern. But I see that a lot when I look at patterns on Ravelry. It's like if you're making a pattern and it's designed to have, you know, 25 stitches all in one color, like, That's not crying out to be stranded knit.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that in most stranded knitting techniques, there are these little speckly stitches that kind of pop in between, you know. Yeah. There's always a little something between the snowflakes so that you mm-hmm. don't go for 18 stitches without knitting your background color.
That's true.
And that when you look at Fair Isle or Norwegian style sweaters or Icelandic designs, Estonian designs, you won't find those super long stretches. They're always, that's where those motifs develop. That's why yeah. they're like little motifs a lot of the time.
So anyway. I can recommend Janine Bages.
Yes.
Her classes are wonderful. I've taken both the color theory class she teaches about color work, and she did like the Fair Isle Yoke, you knit in a mini EPS, Elizabeth's percentage system sweater. They were both great, and yes. she's a good teacher, and she made things really approachable if you're scared
yes.
about either color or figuring out how to do a EPS or Fair Isle pattern in a sweater for
absolutely.
Yourself.
Absolutely. I've also taken two of her classes, and she teaches most years at Madrona.
Yeah, that's
right.
But
she also teaches in the Bay Area.
Because she lives down there.
Because she lives down in mm-hmm. Berkeley. And then she sometimes comes up here and teaches at Suzanne Peterson's. But she's also been doing some workshops. You can, her blog is Feral Knitter. F-E-R-A-L
yeah.
knitter.
I like that name.
.com. And she usually announces if she's got workshops coming up on there.
But if you're planning on going to Madrona, I would definitely kind of check that out. You yeah. could also probably email her and ask her if she's teaching again next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Or planning on it. And Mary Scott Huff teaches a lot on the West Coast, too, I know.
Definitely.
And she has the New Stranded Fair
New Stranded Color Work.
New Stranded Color Work. And she does a lot of teaching. She's
she
pretty
does
hilarious.
Steep classes yeah. and lots of color work classes. And Mary Jane Mucklestone also does a lot with Fair Isle.
Yeah, she does.
And does a lot of teaching. And she also has a couple of new books that are coming out through Interweave this fall on Fair Isle. I think she's got a book that's going to be in part of the style series, like the Lace Style,
oh,
Scarf
yeah,
Style.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's got a Fair Isle style
oh,
book
cool.
that's coming. And she also has another Fair Isle motif book coming out with them this fall, but I believe she's also going to be okay, I could be making this up, but I think she's teaching at the Interweave knitting lab that's coming up this fall, like in San Mateo.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So basically, if you're in the Bay Area and you want to learn color work, you're golden.
There are a lot of people.
Rest of the country, I don't really have a
yeah,
lot of solid advice for
I'm
you.
Sorry. It's just the people I'm aware of that I've yeah. seen advertised as teaching.
And Schoolhouse does workshops during the year as well. I think they do a couple of those during, not just for camp, but during the year. So you can check the website for Schoolhouse Press and see when Meg is teaching. And Amy also travels quite a bit and teaches quite a bit now. And she was teaching at Vogue. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, with all these events happening, I'm sure like Vogue Knitting Live in Chicago will have some great instructor there who is a specialist in this sort of thing.
Yeah. And then I just did a quick search for free Fair Isle patterns that I thought were good, kind of starting projects.
Ooh.
So the first thing, one of the, maybe the second color work project were the End Paper Mitts by Uni Jang.
Oh, yeah.
There are a ton of finished projects on Ravelry.
Okay,
I'm going to... sock yarn. There's no crazy stuff going on with, like, the actual patterning that you're
yeah.
creating. Although they do fit snug. They're sorry. Not Fair Isle. They're just
but yeah,
color works.
But they're really good. They're a good starter one because, again, it's like a really tiny motif.
Yeah. They're like little diamonds. They're really cute.
Really
you can
small.
Do them with sock yarn.
Good stash buster, too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I think they're in three sizes. So that's free. And then the Selbu Modern, which you... I put Selbu Moderns. Selbu Moderns. Which is a free pattern, and you knit that. And
I did. Yeah, it's Kate Gagnon Osborne from Fiber Company, and she wrote it for Canopy Worsted, but I did it in Koigu and Socks at Rock, I think. But it's a quick, it's a really
it's
quick
sock
project.
Yarn weight.
Yeah, sock weight, really fast project. Simple
cute.
Motif. Again, like it's not traditional Fair Isle, just stranded color work, but it was really. A really simple,
yeah,
quick
it's
project.
Like a little floral pattern,
and it looks fancy and involved, but it's a really quick, easy one.
Yeah,
It's a good one.
And also from her Opus Spicatum.
Yeah. Oh, I knit that one too.
Yeah, the zigzaggy one.
That's
just a
little chevron one. And that's a really simple.
That's
one.
Written in canopy worsted for canopy worsted as well.
I think I did mine in cascade, but yeah, that's a bigger one. And that's so, if a you really want something
quick and you're, so you're not working that's with tiny yarn,
that's a really good practice one. Like if you've never knit with two colors before, that's a great one to practice on.
Yeah.
Because it's a quick one and not...
And it's a easy pattern to see if you're off.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the little Fair Isle hat, which is a baby hat by Pearl Soho.
Oh, yeah.
It's so sweet. Like little trees.
Yes.
And it's a baby hat, so it's super tiny. And then I found the Abra Alba wrist warmers, which are mainly stockinette, but they have like a little scallop pattern that's... I think it's three colors along the wrist. And that's free. I think it's sock weight. It might be sport.
Okay.
If you didn't want to knit, like, a hat. And then the Tulip Yoke Baby Cardigan, which I actually knit for Audrey, and that's sport weight, and it just has a little tulip motif along the yoke if you wanted to try steeking.
So. And there's a lot of patterns out there that do that where you just get, you know, that little bit of color work in the yoke, which is also a good kind of starter where you've got a whole lot of easy plain knitting and then just a little bit of color at the end.
And that was a fun one to knit, and Audrey wore a ton.
Oh, that's a good list.
I put it on her a ton. And those are all free.
That's a great list.
Thanks.
Very nice.
And then we had a question from M. Sunny. I got it on via Ravelry. So I'm just going to read you what she said because I thought it was hilarious. She says, it would be great if you would please talk about some strategies of knitting with multiple skeins, say a sweater's worth of hand-painted or hand-dyed yarn. If, say, I knew somebody who impulsively bought many skeins of such and then realized they're all kind of different. And then she says, it's Boss Sonoma, My Sweet Valentine, 4 skeins. I just happen to know, for my friend. So she sent that to me yesterday. So how do you alternate skeins when you're alternating?
This is one thing, like, I'm minimal effort, but I'm religious about alternating skeins. Hand-dyed, kettle-dyed yarns, I always alternate skeins because it doesn't matter how similar they look in the skein, you'll get that sweater out into broad daylight and one sleeve will be a different goddamn color than the rest of the sweater. And of course, it's not until it's totally done that you notice. So I just do, I alternate like every 2 rounds. I'll knit 2 rounds, drop the yarn, knit 2 rounds, carrying it up along the inside. I mean, if it's in pieces, it's even easier because you don't have to worry. The one thing you have to worry about if you're carrying it up in rounds is the tension.
Right.
That you're not, you know, making Roman blinds out of the inside of your sweater by pulling everything up or leaving it too loose and ending up with that first stitch being really baggy. And then it's one of those things too, though, especially when you're knitting in rounds, like, if you knit 1 round, if you knit 3, you can mix it up so that you don't start creating new patterns.
Especially if you have particularly light and dark skeins in the amount you're working with.
But, you know, with if you're knitting flat, though, you know, 2 rounds, then you drop the yarn, you pick up the new yarn,
so 2 rounds. Knit the right side, then the wrong side, then change to the next one, the wrong, right side, and then the wrong side.
And you don't have to worry about tension that way. You know, and so you've got a couple extra ends to weave in, but I think that really, really is worthwhile. I mean, and I do this with hand spun yarns, with anything that has that like human touch to it. Mm-hmm. Or also, it would be helpful if you ended up with a mixed dye lot for some reason and you want to just kind of mix them all in together. That definitely is a little more subtle than like, oh, I'll just save this for the fronts of the sweater.
Yeah. And I've noticed that some people will, like, knit the whole skein, and then when they're almost done with it, they'll, like, knit 2 rows and then, like, kind of work in the new skein. But that still can, especially if your skeins are light and dark, you can still get some weird color shift happening with, like, a little stripey part. So you'd, like, knit till you're almost out of the first skein, then knit 2 rows with the new skein, and then 2 rows with the old skein. As long as it lasts, you alternate them and then just knit with the new skein. I think that's maybe just as fussy as just alternating the two.
Yeah, or sometimes what I'll do is I'll knit the whatever the edging is with just one skein.
Yeah.
And then then I'll join in the next scan, and then they won't be, then they won't run out at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that allows that sort of feathering in of the new scan. Yeah. And that, you know, cause it kind of gives one scan a lead.
Yeah.
But you, where you don't have to think really hard about it, cause you've just run out of one before you run out of the other.
Yeah. If I'm knitting a sweater and the round or back and forth, and you're starting at the bottom and it's ribbing, I don't worry about alternating for the ribbing.
Yeah.
I get past the ribbing cause that doesn't really show because of the stitch pattern. The pearls are seed.
It's just going to make a difference. It's going to look different from the rest of the fabric of the sweater anyway.
Yeah.
So the color difference won't really jump out.
Right.
Yeah.
So I will just start the sweater, and if it's ribbed at the bottom, and then join in to alternate once I am past the ribbing.
Exactly.
And I would actually, when you're going to purchase your yarn, if you're purchasing it in person, which I hope a lot of people are at their LYS, you can open up the skeins and lay the hanks out, especially with things like Madeline Tosh, which vary greatly from batch to batch.
Yes.
Or even within a batch. You can lay them out and actually ask people who work there for their opinion on which ones they think match.
And look at them in daylight.
Yes. That
makes a huge difference, especially here where it's really dark all the time.
Yeah.
Check your dye lots. Buy enough yarn for your projects. That's definitely, it's like, if that's the one mistake, if I could call it, you know, if I have to say the one thing I see knitters do every single day of my life... is they just don't buy enough yarn for their project.
Yeah.
That, you know, they do the calculation and it's like, ooh, for this size I need 1,400 yards. Well, this is 1,370. That'll be okay. It's like, no, honey, it's not. It's not going to be okay. You know, because, you know, maybe it will be, but gosh, buy that extra skein for insurance. I mean, I guess it depends on your LYS.
Their return policy.
And their return policy. At our shop, we take returns and we're not that hard-nosed about it. So... there's no downside to buying that extra skein.
Yeah.
If you don't need it when you're done, just return it. But, you know, one skein of yarn when you're done, you know, that's a hat. That's something else you can do.
Or you take it to your knitting group and have a swap. Like
yeah,
we are in a couple
that's
of
what
weeks.
We're going to do. But
or list it for destash on Ravelry.
Yeah, but I mean, I really, like, every day at work, we get emails, we get phone calls, we have people in the shop who are desperately trying to find that
batch,
one last
whatever.
Skein of yarn that they bought 2 years ago for a sweater, and you know, they can't find it anymore. Now it's discontinued or mm-hmm. the batch is long gone. And it's like, why put yourself through that? Just get enough yarn for your project. You know, give yourself a little bit of a cushion. I mean, I do see people kind of go the other way, too, where, like, they had their yarn run out one time too many, and now they always buy, like, five extra skeins because they're scared. It's like, you don't have to go crazy, but give yourself a little bit of a cushion, and you won't have that
you'll be
horrible,
happier.
Like, sick to your stomach feeling as you get to the end of the project.
Instead of crying into your pillow at night
because like,
you can't finish your sleeve.
Yeah, after I knit, you know, spent 4 months knitting this giant sweater, and now I don't have enough yarn to finish this cuff.
Yeah.
So,
sad.
Spare yourself the trauma and get enough yarn.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was total side rant.
Yeah.
But
important for alternating
important,
skeins.
Though. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that would probably answer your question.
I hope so.
Let me know if it didn't, and
yeah.
I can give you some more information. It's pretty straightforward. Whether you're knitting in the round or flat, I usually do every two rows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yep.
All right.
Let me talk about a book that I hated.
Ooh. Yes, go ahead.
It is Song of Stone by Ian M. Banks.
Oh,
I had talked about this, like the kind of... civil unrest with the guy who left his castle, and then he got caught by some rebel force and got taken back to his castle and held hostage, and I hated it. I didn't say I hated it on Goodreads. I gave it 2 stars.
Oh.
Because I felt like the very kernel of the story was good, and I was actually interested in that plot. But it is so... it devolves so often into poetic flights of fancy, and I just wanted to punch the main character. If I had cared about him enough, I would have wanted to punch him in the face.
Oh, that's not good.
I didn't put that in my Goodreads review. I just said that I was tired of this privileged jerk having inner monologues that were supposedly poetic about his land and his castle and then whatever. It's not yours anymore, jerk face. Get over it.
Check your privilege.
I know. Lost it.
What? Oh, sorry. Anything else you're reading?
Oh, The Golden Compass, which I'm close to finishing. I just assumed that everyone knows that. What that is about, because it was a really bad movie.
And a wildly successful book series.
But. Yes, it's Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials series. I have all three of them. And I'm getting close to the first one, which is close to finishing the first one, which is The Golden Compass. And it's about a young girl who grows up kind of as a ward of this college. And it's kind of in this alternate... Well, it is in this alternate universe where people have these things called daemons, or demons, depending on how you pronounce it, which take the form of animals. So they're kind of like your spirit guide kind of thing, but less hokey. They're, like, connected to you in a physical way. If they're too far away from you, it hurts you, and then they take the form of different animals. So she ends up finding out... through a series of events, since she's been a ward of this college, who her mother and father are, and then they're kind of on separate sides of this kind of battle thing, and she goes into the north to solve a mystery about kids disappearing. So it's an adventure story. It's a young adult series. It's very good. Highly recommend it. Like 10 billion times better than the Chronicles of Narnia. Way less annoying. I know that
fight norns for some people.
I know. People feel very strongly about it. I do not enjoy the religious
undertones. I was going to say undertones. The very strong religious allegory. Yeah. Yes.
That's present in the Chronicles of Narnia. I enjoyed reading them. I just feel like his Dark Materials series, which I've read this one before. I think I read part of the second one. When they came out, because they started coming out, I think, in, like, 2003. So they're not that old. They were just more enjoyable to me, and I felt like the characters were much more... took much more personal responsibility for things that happened and did not rely as much on adults to solve their problems or... what's the lion's name? Aslan. God.
I'm a total... So. Yeah, I've never read the Narnia books because the strong religious undertones, you know, specifically, it's not just that it's religious, it's specifically that it's Christian, just didn't appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I started the Golden Compass a couple times because my older son and Wes both read them, and I just never got into it, but I'm just not... It takes a lot to get me to read a fantasy book. You know, anything that's in, like, oh, we're in a different universe. That's just never really my thing.
So the thing with this is that it's not, like, such a different universe. There are, like, differences. It's kind of like steampunk version.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the technology is definitely like that. But it's not so different and crazy and people have such... weird names. Like, it's very similar to ours. Yeah. So I don't feel like it's as hokey, kind of, as some fantasy is. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm very close to the end of the first book. So.
Cool.
And I started reading War of the Worlds, which I'd never read before. And it's really good. Either. It's totally a page-turner.
I don't know if I've ever read any H.G. Wells.
It's,
But again, I'm not really a science fiction-y kind of person.
It's a page-turner. It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's science fiction. Everyone's seen, like, all the various movie versions
of it.
I got it as a free download from Project Gutenberg. It's on there. Cool. And it's a super fast read.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
So. Excellent.
Yep.
I just remembered when I... So I haven't been reading any books.
Do you finish that Vampire and the Lemon?
Yeah, I did, and I liked it a lot. Although, actually, the last story I didn't love. I mean, it was really interesting. It was just one of these books that I like kept wanting to talk to people about because it was so bizarre. But I And I have Kate Atkinson's new book, Life After Life, sitting on my nightstand. So I really want to read that because I love her. And I've been hearing a lot of interesting reviews. Like, some people have really liked it and some people haven't. So I'm curious to see how I'll like it. But something I have been reading, not a book, a new website that I love that is called Park Slope Family Circus, where it's recaptioned Family Circus cartoons. But in, so one of the, I reminded myself of it because I kind of paraphrased from it. One of them is like the two kids are sitting on the, two of the kids are sitting on the ground, and the caption is one of them saying to the other one, "Macklemore needs to check his privilege." And or one where like the mom is walking in with like an armful of groceries and one of the kids saying, "If that fruit PLU doesn't start with a 9, you can just take it back to the store." And just all this, it's very, it's well, it's very true of Park Slope. It's also very true of Seattle as well. And it's like, they're so on the nose and so funny. Like, I can't, I was trying to explain it to Wes and it's like, I couldn't even make one up to explain what they were like. Because they were, like, so dead on the nose. Like, there's one of, like, one of the little kids wearing this giant, you know, obviously an adult-sized tank top. And the quote is, "Does this come in an overdyed chambray?" You know, it's like Park Slope Family Circus. I'm that loving it. Awesome. It's really funny. That's my, my daily lunchtime read now where I'm like, they post 3 or 4 of them a day. And I really love that. So
cool.
That has been making me happy.
To take a look.
What you been watching?
I watched
Good List.
Yeah. I've watched some stuff lately besides like TV shows I've already seen. Give Me the Banjo, which is a documentary about the history of the banjo in the United States, narrated by Steve Martin because he's a banjo player.
Yes.
It is very good. Cool. It starts like obviously the I don't know actually if that's obvious to most people. The banjo is traditionally an It came from Africa with slaves to the United States. And then kind of it became the first kind of American instrument. And it tracks its history from when it came over with slavery and how it kind of changed over the years and what it is now. And I told Noah, because Noah watched it with me, it was the first time I'd ever seen an African American person play a banjo before because there's such a racial stereotype that it's not really a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it, true. In Folklife is this big music festival, and I've there are tons of banjos. Never seen African-American person play one before.
Yeah.
So, but they had, like, there's a big festival, and I can't remember where it was. Back east somewhere. Where it's, like, a big gathering of all these African-American banjo players and, like, folk music people. That was totally cool looking.
Huh, cool.
Very interesting. So it talks about the history and the kind of racial tension about the banjo. Obviously, that's there. Yeah. Into, like, new banjo people who, like, changed it by playing it, the banjo, with traditional Chinese music.
Oh, wow.
And stuff like that. Cool. It's super cool.
You just reminded me, I keep hearing about this new documentary that's coming out that's called 20 Feet from Stardom that's all about backup Seth, right? singers. Oh, maybe it did.
I think they came out with
it's like getting the prize list. Oh, okay.
Of, and a list of things that were coming back for mainstream release, yeah. I think. That was one of them.
Yeah, so it's a documentary about musical, like about backup singers in the music industry. That sounds cool. I think it's going to be really cool.
There was like a whole music thing at SIFF, and I didn't get to see anyone. Like a band called Death? Yeah. I totally wanted to see that.
Yeah.
But they're on like a Tuesday night at 9. Yeah. And I get up at 6 in the morning. I can't stay up that late.
You're a punk rocker in your heart, but your schedule just isn't punk rock anymore.
It's the opposite of punk
rock. Your work life is not punk rock anymore. Yeah. Sorry. So what else? You got a big long list.
Oh, so that was very good. It's on Netflix. Watch instantly. So I watched Dark Skies, which is pretty good. It's a thriller with Carrie Russell. She and her husband have these two kids, and they live in the suburbs, and weird stuff starts happening in their house. And I try to figure out what it is. It's not really horror. It's definitely a thriller.
Okay.
So, it's pretty good.
good.
I watched Moonrise Kingdom.
Wasn't it awesome?
It was awesome.
I loved it. Aww.
Noah went camping last weekend, so I waited till he was gone to watch it, because I like to watch... You know, he likes Wes Anderson. Okay. I just wanted to watch it without interruption.
Yes.
In the silence, and it was just so good.
So good.
And, oh my God, so much Hank Williams music. It made me so happy, because I have all those songs on vinyl. Just, ugh. Yeah.
Cool.
And of course, like, oh, so the thing that, and I just realized this, Wes Anderson, like, I think people either really like him or not so much.
Yeah.
He has a very particular and very strong style to his films, especially as far as costuming and sets go. But what reminds me of is that blog Things Organized Neatly. Oh. Where, like, all his sets and his costumes and everything, there's, like, no extraneous stuff.
Yeah.
Like, everything is there for a reason. It serves a purpose.
A very thoughtful tableau.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And I was just like, this is, like, Things Organized Neatly. It's just a crazy Tumblr. If you haven't seen it, you should go look at it, because it is all just things that are organized neatly.
I love that film. But it is definitely, I think it's a polarizing film. It is the litmus test of, do you love or do you hate Wes Anderson? Because if you don't like Wes Anderson even a little bit, I think that film will get you into, like, a frothing rage. But if you like Wes Anderson, it's everything you love about him.
Yes.
The art direction, the costume,
the cool narration, choices,
the charming, quirky storytelling. I mean, just everything. Oh, God, I love that.
Yeah. And it has Frances McDormand and Bill Murray and Harvey Keitel and Edward Norton,
Bruce Willis, Jason Schwartzman's in there. It's like the whole, and then the kid who plays the lead is fantastic. He hasn't really done much else. He showed up in a cell phone commercial a couple months ago. I was watching him. My oldest son is like,
"Where's his hat?"
Well, I didn't even recognize him because he's like, you know, dressed all modern and talking about cell phones. And my son is going, "That's the kid from Moonrise Kingdom." I mean, he's also like 2 years older, three years older than he was in the film. He's like, "That's the kid from Moonrise Kingdom." And I was kind of doing the old lady, like, leaning in and squinting at the TV, like, "Is it really? Oh, yeah."
I do that all the time. And I took Audrey to see Epic over the weekend. Oh, was that really good? It was pretty cute. Yeah. It wasn't my favorite,
but
she liked it. There are a couple times where she was, like, frozen. Like, couldn't move, and I would pat her on the leg, and then she'd put her hands down. She did, like, the hands up in the air kind of thing, like, "Oh my gosh, what's gonna happen?" I patted her on the leg, and her hands went down, and then she would, like, blink. I knew everything was okay. She liked it, though.
Okay.
And then Top of the Lake, which I haven't mentioned before, but I watched maybe before the last time we recorded, which is a crime mystery thriller miniseries that takes place in New Zealand, and it is very good. It's like Red Riding Trilogy caliber goodness. It's really good. It's weird. It's pretty quirky. Is that Elizabeth, what's her face, that plays Peggy Olson? Elizabeth Moss is the female detective for the child abuse thing. So it has to do with children. So if that bothers you a lot, then it's probably not your thing, but it's very well done. I didn't feel like it was done in a way that made me feel icky. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it has Holly Hunter in it.
Ooh, always a plus.
Yeah.
I love her.
It's a very complicated plot with a lot of stuff going on. And beautiful, I was going to say sets. It's not sets. It's filmed outside. Scenery. Yes. And interesting characters. And it all evolves around this 12-year-old girl who shows up in... various things happen, but through her school, it is found out by the adults that she's pregnant.
Ooh.
And then she disappears shortly after. I'll just say that she does not die.
Okay.
So... that's not the
issue.
Well,
that's good.
But it's surrounding, like, her crazy family in this small town. And then Elizabeth Moss, her character, comes in to investigate what's happening. And then she's got this weird... and she's from that small town. Mm. She had a bad experience when she was younger. And so she has all this baggage, emotional baggage about being back in the town, and then her mom is sick, and it's like a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Very good.
Oh, cool.
And it's all on Watch Instantly.
And you also watched Arrested Development, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. And I enjoyed it. It's not as good as the first three seasons. Yeah. It's a little confusing to follow because each story follows a different character. And if you, the way the plot is brought together, it's not a single plot for each episode. It's like one overarching plot that is very confusing when you first start watching it.
Yeah.
I liked it. Okay. I also feel like when you've been writing for a show and then it takes a long break like that and you try and come back, like there's some disconnect that happens.
Yeah.
So, but there were definitely funny parts. And they were all toward, I think, the latter part of the new series.
Yeah.
But the Maybe episode is awesome, and the Buster episode is okay. Awesome. And Liza Minnelli is in it still. So.
Yeah. So after our last podcast, I'm so suggestible, I even, like, I was talking about how, like, you know, I like to watch a whole series, and then I'll, like, be like, oh, I'm done with Grey's Anatomy, and then I'll be like, oh. So I went home and watched the rest of Grey's Anatomy on Hulu, got caught up with Grey's Anatomy. Still sucks, but I'm still watching it. My son, like, kept coming through while I was watching it. He's like, why do you watch this? And I was like, I can't explain it. I don't know. I just, I'm committed at this point. That's I have funny. To just ride it out. And then I watched season 5 of True Blood, which, wow, like, it's like they jumped the shark, then they dug it back up, then they, like, turned it into a vampire, and then they, like, killed it again, and then they made... It's, oh, my goodness. But it's another one of those ones where it's, like, still watching.
Yep. I'm still watching True
Blood. And then I started back on season 6 of Dexter. So I know 7 just came out on DVD, but I'm still getting caught up on season 6. And it's another one where it's like, it feels like we're just kind of running over the same terrain over and over again. Like, they're not really finding really interesting ways to take it somewhere else. And then I heard, like, they got renewed for, like, another season. I'm like, God, what are they going to do? But that's what I've been watching lately.
Oh, I also watched the season premiere, because that's all that's available on AMC or Showtime. Of the third season of The Killing. So it did get canceled, got uncanceled.
Right.
Because it was all, like, wrapped up and cool and with the two seasons. And I was like, okay. Because you and Rebecca were saying, slow. But I really liked it. But then I watched the premiere episode.
It was online. It wasn't that it was slow. It was that the wrap up of the first season and the beginning of the second season is like... this big, like, ha-ha on the audience, like, oh, this thing we've been dangling in front of you this whole time is never going to happen. Like, it's not happening. And
But it does all tie up at the end of season 2.
Okay, but 2 episodes into season 2, I'm like, I've had my fill of misery. It wasn't the slowness of it. It was like watching this group of characters who are all so profoundly unhappy
in this
rainy misery scape. And,
yep.
And you know, I mean, look, I just watched season whatever the hell it was of Grey's Anatomy, so obviously I don't require shows where characters are happy, but I don't know. It was like, I would just think about watching it on Sunday night and be like, is this how I want to spend my Sunday night with these miserable people in the rain?
I was really excited when I saw it was on Netflix, though. Season 2.
Maybe I'll catch up on season 2. Well, my older son has watched Walking Dead now and Breaking Bad, like, through to the end of what's available on Netflix. Yeah. And I stopped with both of those, so he keeps nudging me to watch Breaking Bad again. And that was another one of those shows where it was like, I like these characters. I don't want to watch all these terrible things happen to them.
Or have them do terrible things to other people.
Or have them turn into terrible people.
Yeah.
And so I just, like, I hit, like, my misery limit with those shows. Yeah. I think, and I was just like,
ooh. So on to Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Where people are miserable, but not in but such in a such horrible way. But in such a
stupid way that I don't care. Yeah, it doesn't really hurt me that way, but yeah. We're super long tonight. I'm being texted by a child who wants to know where I am.
Not at home, obviously. Yep.
He knows I'm here.
All right. Well, think that's it.
Yeah.
When do you leave for camp?
I leave for TNNA.
Oh, right.
A week from Thursday. So, and then we can record when I get back, and can fill you guys in on what's gonna come in.
Sounds awesome. And I just wanted to say congratulations to my best friend, Nikki, who is starting her job on Wednesday.
Yay!
She moved from California to Indiana and is there all by herself.
Congratulations.
So if you know any awesome knitting groups in the Kokomo, Indianapolis area, you should let me know and I'll pass on the information.
Cool.
Because she is regretful that she did not get to move here and be part of our awesome knitting group.
Well, yeah. She's still an honorary member. She can be a pearly girl whenever she wants.
Yeah. So, congratulations. Yes. Good luck in the new job. You'll do great. That's it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.